Hello, everybody. I'm Lisa Burwell, your host of V Speaks Conversations with Heart and Soul. This podcast is a layer of storytelling that is part of the V Magazine brand, now celebrating 17 years. And I'm pleased to introduce to you a tastemaker, a designer, all things aesthetically perfect and pleasing, Libby Baker Spate, owner and founder of Baker Design Co. Libby, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
Thank you for being here. So I've been an admirer of your work for several years, seeing photos and looking on social media, and our paths had not crossed. And I'm like, how can this be? How can our paths not have crossed yet? Right. But I'm glad when they did.
In a small town, that's hard.
In a small town. In a small town that we both opened our businesses in similar time frame, that seemingly, and I don't know if you feel this way, has seemingly become a large small town.
Yes.
Where you don't see everybody you used to, and you don't, because it really did get seemingly bigger to me since the pandemic.
Yes.
in the last 4 years.
Agreed. Yes.
And I sometimes drive down the road and I look at the traffic and I'm like, am I in Atlanta? Like, I actually do not know what happened.
But I know. And as longtime locals, we tend to hermit this time of year.
Yes.
And so that's when we don't see those people that have been here for so long, because we tend to kind of stay out of that crazy zone.
Right.
And then we come out in the fall and play.
Right. And then when I complain about it to myself, then I think, well, that is how your business is growing.
Yes.
Is how my business stays open. So I don't know what
it's
kind
of. It's good for business, not great for the stress level.
True. That's true.
Yeah.
So since COVID, our area, had an exponential uptick.
Yes.
In different demographics, mm-hmm. higher incomes, changing the landscape of our one percenters to half percenters. Mm-hmm. This must have been very good for your business.
It was great for our business. COVID was a weird year for us. We had a lot of change, mm-hmm. like most people during that year. I purchased our studio that we're now in, and at the end of 2019, found out I was pregnant in February of 2020. And then COVID shut the world down in March. And I had a child at home that we were homeschooling. My husband and I were running businesses that during that time, once people kind of figured out how to kind of pivot around the COVID structure, our businesses took off exponentially. My husband's in the golf industry. I'm in the design industry. Everyone wanted to be outside, and they were stuck in home at the same time, and they wanted their houses to look prettier, and they wanted to be outside playing golf. So we were kind of running around like chickens with our heads cut off a little bit during that time. Also being pregnant with my second child during a time that was very unsure of everything.
And even delivering, was that?
Yes, that whole thing was terrifying in itself. Just not wanting to get sick or not knowing how it would affect the baby and things like that. He is wild and healthy and crazy.
So
and
good.
All the things. Mm-hmm. So we persevered.
Did you deliver at Sacred Heart?
We did.
Well, that's
supposed
to be like the Taj Mahal of pregnancy deliveries.
Isn't it was. Yeah, I had very good experiences both times there.
Awesome.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
So I opened and founded V in 2008, and mm-hmm. you opened your company in 2009.
I did. Yes, 2009.
So take me back to that time and place and what was going on in our world and how. Did you feel like, wow, did I open the business at the wrong time? Or did you think you opened it at the right time?
A little delusional. I think uh-huh. everyone that opens up a small business is slightly delusional in the beginning, right?
Uh-huh.
I had been working for a real estate development company from the time I was 19, 20, and I moved here with them. So I got a job while I was in design school and moved here with them. And, 2008, the recession hit, and we were kind of just diversifying our portfolio or their portfolio, and I just wasn't really feeling fulfilled in the work that we were doing at the time. And so I was like, I owe it to myself, to my parents for funding my education, to go out on my own and do this. And with a good push out the door from them, they were like, you should do this. And I was like, I don't think I'm ready, but sure. If you think I am, great.
Mm-hmm.
So I, with a laptop computer and a picnic table fold up in my little third bedroom in my in my townhouse at the time, started the business. I had one client, mm-hmm. and she's still a client to this day. 16 years strong. We have done multiple projects, redone projects that we did in the beginning. And it's been a lovely friendship that's developed over the years. But things were so different then. But the cool thing was there was so much in foreclosure, not for those that were in foreclosure, but people that were coming in to buy the foreclosures had the money to gut and they had the money to furnish. And so my projects when I first started were all remodels.
Okay.
Full guts. Uh-huh. Because the houses had been sitting, you know, for a couple of years when the bubble burst. Nobody was really moving things around very quickly. But I was very lucky that when I did kind of jump off the cliff and decide to do this myself, that those opportunities kind of unfolded in front of me, and they were perfect size jobs to start with for me to cut my teeth and learn more about construction. I'd learned a good bit prior to, but doing it on my own was a whole another bear, right? And so we kind of kept picking up more work for out-of-town people. It was all referral, word of mouth, and it kind of just catapulted from there. The market started coming back. We moved towards more new construction. And then now we're definitely more primarily new construction custom homes. Still do some rentals, still do some remodels, but, you know, primarily new construction.
I had the privilege of a little sneak peek of your documentary that Mark Little, our previous interviewee that just walked off set, created with Maldra McDonald and you. And I think it is a beautiful story.
Thank you.
And I know this is a weird takeaway that I'm going to say from watching that. And all the testimonies from your clients and how much love and how good you are at what you do. You even said you even go down to the plateware. And so tell me, like, that's an all-inclusive program that I didn't know that a designer would go that deep.
Yes. So,
and how often do you do that?
As much as they'll let us, honestly. So it really just depends on the client. Sometimes if this is a second home and it truly is a second home, they don't have any of that. They have it all at home, but it's their nicer stuff that they want to keep there. It's family heirloom stuff. Sometimes they're willing to part. They've got two sets or whatever. But when I started this business, I was really just trying to keep the lights on, right? And it was all of survival mode. And I did a lot of things that I needed to do just to make that train keep going down the tracks. But at some point, I learned I'm working so hard and I'm giving so much of myself, but it's not being appreciated. And I learned to kind of pull back a little bit. And in that, was able to develop a mindset of, I want to provide the absolute best experience for my clients that I can. And being able to do everything turnkey, what luxury is that? I mean, it is the creme de la creme, right? And being able to just literally walk in and go, oh, there's the forks, there's the knives. Oh, let me pour myself a glass of wine. It's all done. And just the more, and in all fairness, to the note and testament of mentioning I did everything I could to keep the lights on in the beginning, I decorated people's houses for Christmas. I did it in college for extra money during break in design school. And so I would go in and I would trick the house out with Christmas decorations. And so I started doing that for clients. If we were installing their house before the holidays, I'd go ahead and do it all. So all they had to do was show up.
Wow.
And they loved it. And it became such a warm experience for both parties. I loved being able to gift that to those families as part of our services. And I loved, because a lot of times I wasn't charging enough for it. Let's be real about that. I just enjoyed it so much. And I really tend to give more of myself than I should.
Right.
But
that's just why you're so good.
That's who I am.
That's why you're in demand.
That's how I'm wired.
And then it's why you can up your prices today.
That's right. That's why I get paid what I'm worth now.
Correct.
So basically the whole turnkey thing really stemmed from, I worked with a client when I was pregnant with my first child, and the wife had suffered a severe stroke, and she was always the one that did those things for their family. She was the one that did all the Christmas decorating. She was the one that did all the holiday prep. She did all the house stuff. They had multiple homes prior, but she was not in the state to be able to carry out that. And so they came to me through a referral of a real estate agent that was a common friend at the time. And She said, look, this is a different scenario. I know you'll be a good fit with them. I really want you to take care of them. And I was like, got it. I will take care of your people. And so we are still decorating their house for Christmas.
And is she okay?
She is okay. Mm-hmm. Almost fully recovered.
Awesome.
Yes, they did all kinds of medical advanced treatments with her, and she's thriving and doing well. But it was my opportunity to step in and provide them with a memorable experience in a time that wasn't really full of happiness and laughter, right? It was giving a weight off of their shoulders, where sometimes mm-hmm. people would look at decorating for the holidays as such a daunting task mm-hmm. if it's something they've never done, right? Mm-hmm. The husband and the kids are like, well, she always does it. So thankfully mm-hmm. they were in the position that they had me, and I offered to do it, and I was so excited to do it. And same thing with the kitchen. We stocked everything, turnkey soup to nuts. We did the silverware, plates, dishes, you know, the small appliances, everything, sheets, towels, you name it.
Wow.
It's a very daunting thing when you don't have to do it on a regular basis. A lot of people don't realize, because when they come to a new home, their first home, they usually are given things from a wedding. Mm. So they have, you know, sheets or starter towels or things. Yeah, they have starter pack, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, hey, mom gave me some furniture, and they add two over the years. When you're doing something like a second home or a retirement home for, you know, longevity, they don't realize, oh, I got to go get all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's hard.
Just going to like Williams-Sonoma alone in that scenario is like, how much am I about to spend here?
Right.
You know,
a lot.
So yes. And that's, again, it's another like sticker shock thing that we've worked really hard to help kind of soften the blow of that. Mm-hmm. And we roll it into one big number. So you swallow that number and then this is everything that you get, soup to nuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely worth it for them, especially if they have the money too.
Absolutely.
So from one creative person to another, this is going to be somewhat of an unusual question. How do you convince or have your clients trust you to the point that you can actually deliver a Libby Baker Co. design without people like extracting things and I want this and I want that? Because sometimes in the creative field, the most disappointing, unsatisfying part of it is when you present something that you think is really good for a client.
Yeah.
And then they either don't like it or they want to change five things about it and they deconstruct it to the point of hideousness.
Yes.
And then you wonder, like, why am I even in the creative business?
It can be very deflating. Okay. And there's been a lot of deflation to get to this point. But I will say I've really gotten very strong in my stance with, okay, these are the things I'm willing to let go of in the design, but these are our mainstays. Like, if you don't love that, that's great. But let's look at it from a full big picture concept, right? A lot of people hyperfixate on like a chair or the fabric on the chair. And I'm like, you are focusing with a microscope on something that is not that big in the scheme of the room. And so I focus more on the form and the function of how the room works. So if we get into like kind of a tussle, if you will, verbally about what should work and what shouldn't, sometimes I just step back and I look at them and I go, we got to trust the process here. Like, I get it. I hear you. Those are things I'm willing to like negotiate on, and let's talk through why this works and why this doesn't work. If it's an absolute no for you, I'm happy to go back to the table like one more time. But I pride myself really, really well on being a very good listener, and more to the things that they're not saying to me than the things that they actually are verbally executing. As you know, as someone in the creative industry, what people wear and how they carry themselves and the brands they're attracted to are the things that already tell me what's going to work for them and what's not. Because when they show up to the office, whether they're aware of it or not, I've assessed it all, right? And that's what motivates me to design a space for them, is because, and them, not me, right? I mean, there's lots of designers that have made millions and millions of dollars on their look.
Right.
But what makes me happy and what makes me feel fulfilled in what I do is to give them their own ascribable look.
Yeah.
Whether they're good at fashion or they're good at putting colors together, that's not what they're good at. That's why they come to me. But I want someone to walk into their home and say, oh my gosh, this is Lisa Burwell to a T. This is so her. Oh my gosh, this is fantastic.
Well, you had gifted us a beautiful basket when we had first met in this past 12 months, I think. And everything that you had picked in there that was curated was like, I don't even understand like how this person like knows that I would like all of these things.
I'm a stalker.
Internet stalker.
So to your point, like you did like assess.
I did my research.
Yeah, you did assess that. And then during that meeting that we had, we were getting ready to launch our gentleman's issue with Kevin Costner on the issue. And then when you and I were talking and I had such a comfort level that you had so much confidence and you knew your craft and you knew what to do. And we were looking for a guest editor to helm our C'est la vie with, you know, with a new perspective and fresh eyes, which we have in this issue here with Kevin Costner on the cover, which we'll show. But you did a magnificent job with this.
Thank you.
And it was different than, you know, what we had been presenting, and we wanted it to be different, and we wanted it to be your look. But I will say you nailed it.
Thank
and
you.
And my question is, obviously respecting and knowing all that you do in your craft and your business, and then, you know, you're segueing to a magazine format, and you're able to, like, nail that also. So what were you like when you were younger? Like, was this
neurotic?
I don't know. No, I mean, was this like a gift? Like, were you an artist? Like, tell me about all the things that
I always loved the creative things. I was always drawing, always had a pad of paper and crayons or markers, drawing something, not always house plans per se, but something, anything. I've always been immersed in the arts. When I was younger, I loved theater. I was big into, like, if I wasn't going to be a designer, I wanted to be a performer, a singer, and an actress. That was 10-year-old Libby.
Yeah, that's all right.
42-year-old Libby's like, let's be realistic. Yeah. Let's do something else. But I've always loved the arts. I've always had an attention to detail. Just loved all the little things that, you know, I'm just very detail-oriented, and I'm repeating myself, but noticing flowers in a different way that other people would notice flowers. And I've always loved just the arts in general, like theater, music, photography, all of those little things. And I wouldn't say I'm a master at any of them, but I love and appreciate all of them. And I think being immersed in all of the culture and the arts industry at a young age is really what's helped me kind of develop more of that at an older age. I just have kind of honed the craft, right? And kind of made sure to get in a lot of different areas where it can help. I feel like art and design are all kind of commingling, especially like, you know, pairing up with Mark and Madra, like they have just a different perspective, which is such a great way to look at things. Of like, 'cause as a creative, sometimes you can get tunnel vision, right? And focus on the wrong things. And it's so nice to have other professionals give you kind of feedback of like, hey, what if we pivot and do this? And it just, it makes you better. And I'm always open to feedback and always open to just kind of listening to another perspective for sure.
Well, the absolute hardest person to market is yourself.
Oh my gosh.
It's absolutely torturous.
It is. And I am not a showy individual. Like, I'm a big personality, but like, to my core, authenticity is very important to me. I don't want to look like I'm just, you know, a used car salesman trying to show off my design work. It's totally not my vibe. And so that's actually something that I struggle a lot with, wanting to make sure that it's perceived in that way and not how it can be in a world of social media where everyone is faking it till they make it.
Right. So what you said earlier about the interior design business is very different today than it was when you opened it. Tell me about that.
Well, so social media has changed the game a good bit. And then, so let's even roll it back. You mentioned the child game. So I am a product of the Trading Spaces TLC era, right? So this was when HGTV was like first coming out when I was in high school. And I knew then that it was going to be a very different world, right? It's just the way they market things. And I think the mainstream media is finally arriving at what we do at our core is a luxury service. And it is no longer one of those things that's just accessible to everyone, like Trading Spaces was, where there is a place for that and there is a great market for it. But as far as a mainstream reach, understanding that elevating that market is important because it's not for everyone. And I think shifting like where it was in the beginning, which was, oh, hey, yeah, we can do this and we can do that. Well, yeah, all that stuff costs money. Mm-hmm. And it costs way more time than how it's being perceived online. And I think there's a realism that's coming in on all of that, where it's kind of stripping everything back and saying, yeah, no, we need a real budget. Yeah, we need a real timeline. Mm-hmm. We can't make beautiful things happen in 5 minutes on air.
Right. And you used to do that.
I mean, I would put myself under the gun and try to get things done and turn around so quickly. It was killing myself. Yeah, right. And that was before I had kids. So I had all the time in the world to be able to invest and spend the late hours and hot gluing stuff and, you know, doing all the things. Right. And I realized shortly after my second son was born during COVID, things just really shifted for me on what I needed to provide for my clients moving forward and what I wanted out of my business. Because what I was realizing is that I'm working so hard, but I'm not fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And so shifting that focus to be more prominent in my boys and my family and taking the time to do what I need to do as a mother first and focusing on my boys and shifting that way was far more important. Mm.
So, Libby, it's really true that you can't grow a business when you're doing everything. And when you open a business, you are doing everything because that's how you have to launch it. So several things have to happen, but the biggest one is the fact that you have to understand that you can no longer do everything when you actually are capable of doing everything because you had to. And that was probably for me like one of the absolute hardest adjustments to make, you know, because you want to just do
type
but then
A.
You can't. I'm totally type A. Yeah. I mean, but no can do.
No, that part has been really challenging. And I still even struggle with the growth of our team because I went from having big aspirations of having a big firm and a store at some point, and then I was like, no. This is muddying the waters. This is not giving the clear vision of what I want to provide. And it's that true luxury service. We want to be able to, like, if you need us to pick you up from the airport when you're flying in, we'll come get you and bring you to the house. Like, it's a concierge service. It's a luxury service. And so being able to do that, I can't do everything. I can't be everything. And so growing that team was important for a minute. And then it was back to just the two of us again. And I've learned for me, tiny but mighty is what's important because I can still keep quality control. And I've just learned to take on less and I take on more what fits for us and what's a good fit for the client and for us. Instead of, I was very much a yes woman and was like, yeah, I can do it. Yep. Got it. And there were some not so comfortable conversations about falling flat on my face and not meeting all the goals and the timelines. I remember I got fired from a job because the seamstress made the curtains too short and I gave her the wrong measurement because I was going too fast. It's a fixable thing. Mm-hmm. I really probably shouldn't have gotten fired from that.
Right.
But it was something I could have prevented. Mm-hmm. And every one of those fails and every one of those fall flat on your face moments taught me to be better at what I am doing now and what I want to provide for people. Because people not being nice about mistakes was also a big thing, too. It's like, all right, okay, cool. Because once you get to a certain level and caliber of expenditures in a project, they scrutinize everything to the ninth degree. Yeah. And so you got to have it buttoned up. You got to have your T's crossed, your I's dotted. Mm-hmm. And I've always prided myself on being very organized and having all of the, you know, things where they need to be. And we've only gotten better as the years have progressed and the wheels are greasing as we go. But it's a hard world out there and knowing when to grow and when not to grow. And that was a big challenge for me is I've just decided we're going to land at tiny but mighty and that is okay.
And it is okay. And it is hard. And these tough lessons, especially the lessons that you have to pay for, like literally and figuratively. And that's an ouch. It makes you not do them again. But like, 100%. You know, I have a joke. This is totally a joke. But, you know, like when I was growing up, it was like the All-American Dream slogan would be bandied about like constantly. Almost like the propaganda of you should open your own business. And you should, and that's like the right American thing to do. And you can do anything that you set your mind to. Now, I do believe in all of that. But sometimes I just say, is this the all-American dream?
Are we all delusional?
This is pretty hard.
It's really hard. And it's not for everybody. It's, you know, like, yeah. I am a very tenacious individual. I think I was just wired that way. Both of my parents worked growing up. So I always knew that I was that dork at 16. I was like, can I go apply for a job? I had already had like 3 babysitting jobs. Yeah. And but I still wanted to go fill out a job application on my 16th birthday because I got my driver's license and I needed a job to pay for my freedom. Right.
Right. Right.
And that's the dream they sell you. Right.
Yeah. Like mine was at 14.
Yes.
So
in Mississippi, same. I think you could get a job at 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. So I got a job at The Gap. That was my first job and loved it. I went through 2 Christmases. I feel like everyone, and I've already told both of my children, they will work in retail and in the restaurant industry before they go to college because that will make you a kinder human. You will learn how nasty some people can be in those environments and it will make you a kinder individual. And then moved from there. I just kind of wasn't feeling fulfilled in that and turned around and came home from work one day and told my dad, I was like, God, this manager keeps asking me like pop culture questions about The Gap. I'm in high school. I'm trying to learn about history and these things. It's like algebra. I don't care about this stuff. And he was like, well, what do you care about? I was like, well, I really like, you know, at the time moving my room around like all the time and curating little corners of my room and doing all the things. And he was like, what do you think about interior design? So back then, I'm going to date myself a little bit, but we still had a Yellow Pages phone book. Mm-hmm. And I went at 16 years old and flipped that joker open and found interior. They were called decorators back then. Interior decorators and designers. And I called every single one in the Jackson metro area and asked them for a job.
At 16.
At 16. And they, at the time, I also, you know, ignorance is bliss. Mm-hmm. I had no idea you got free interns from college. Mm-hmm. So here I am at 16 asking for money and a job.
Did you get it?
Eventually, yes. The very last person I called, Gloria Jones, was my first interior design boss. And I was kind of her errand girl office person. And I did anything from faxing orders in. I ran stuff back to the antique store that was out on approval that didn't get approved by clients. And her resource room was my playground. I was organizing fabrics and all of those things. And she gave me my first start in the design business. And I was hooked ever since. Fast forward, her biggest client ended up being the real estate development company that I worked for that moved me here. And I helped design their daughter's nursery. And remember having all these conversations back and forth about, like, your fabric's discontinued. We have to get this. And, you know, at that point, I think the pregnant mama was like, just pick something. I don't care. Like, let's just get it over with. And they were remodeling. And then she ended up becoming my boss years later and dear friend. She was the reason we were in Montana. We were there for her son's wedding and was also someone I babysat in college. I kind of just always wanted to be doing things, right? And always working. So that part was fun.
So you found your calling early.
I did. Yeah. I kind of just, you know, was hooked as soon as I got a little taste of it. And I worked after school a few days a week, but I loved it. I loved everything about it. And I think I was still pretty naive in the industry at that point. But when I went and worked with Paige, it was baptism by fire. I mean, she was a very smart businesswoman, always flying by the seat of her pants, but so incredibly smart. And I learned more from her throwing me out in the world and just telling me to figure it out than I did from anything else. And I mean, she would literally, this was before Pinterest, right? Mm-hmm. So she would rip out pages of magazines and go, hey, go show the trim guy this. Go show the tile guy this. And this is what you're going to do. And I'm like, I'm 19 years old, because I was in design school at the time. I was like, I'm 19, 20 years old. They're not going to listen to me. And she's like, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. It'll be great. I'm just like walking up to the door like, these dudes are going to eat me alive.
And did they?
No. Yeah. Thankfully, they were. It was kind of the start of, you know, just prelude to, I have really great relationships with my contractors because I learned how to talk to them when I was young and naive in the field. And I kind of learned how they want to be spoken to and when they want ideas and when they don't want ideas and when it's more of a collaboration than a dictatorship.
In your own home, did you build that from the ground up?
No. So we have the house that we are currently in was a short sale foreclosure. Okay. And so we've kind of massaged it over the years. And we did a good chunk of remodel when we first moved in. This was 13 years ago and made it our own. Yeah. But you know, it's always going to be a work in progress.
Yeah, it will happen too. Yes, but it's absolutely funny that the cobbler's kids have no shoes.
Oh, it's, yes. No, I mean, I'm the last project all the time.
Same. So what I find fascinating regarding interior designers that I don't know if like the general population understands that when you get your license, you have to know so many more things than about draperies and rugs and fabrics. You know, you really do need to know about your fixtures and working with either an architect or a builder or even, you know, sometimes you're hired to do oversee a lot of that too.
Yes. Yeah.
So how do you like that part of it?
So it's funny you say that because I've kind of gone back and forth because I started with remodels in the beginning. I was kind of the project manager in the beginning. And so I would oversee the contractor and just make sure the vision came to life, right? Now, I don't take on as many remodels because I don't have as much time to project manage. I do more of a construction liaison type agreement now where we oversee the project, but I'm not managing it. The contractor manages it. Mm-hmm. And that part has helped free me up to really just focus on the design and not when the tile guy's showing up or the sheetrock's getting finished and the kitchen cabinets are going in. I'm just executing the vision and making sure that the experience as a whole is delightful and engaging for the client. But for the most part, that is a common misconception. People are like, oh, I love what you do. It must be so fun. And I just chuckle to myself and die inside a little bit because I'm like, you have no idea. But it's funny because, again, HGTV and TLC has made it this like dramatization that it's this magical, like super Hollywood type of industry. And it is full of pretty things. But if they don't function first, like one of my biggest pet peeves, and you will probably see this for the rest of your life now and go, oh my gosh, people do that all the time, is a four-legged table in front of a banquette. At first glance, it's a beautiful picture. But how many knees have knocked that leg of that table as they're scooting into a banquette? It should always be a trestle. It should always be a pedestal. Always.
Yes.
Right? They're just little nuggets of things. And otherwise, you're like knocking your knees on stuff. But again, function over beauty first. I can make anything pretty. If it doesn't function properly, what are we doing?
Right. did you ever think of making your own TV spot on a house?
Yes. I actually did a small snippet for a pilot.
You did?
Years ago. Yes.
What happened?
It didn't go anywhere, but that's okay. It was with a contractor who was like trying to shop a show at the time, locally. And he was like, you and I work great together. Why don't you come on and we'll do a couple little videos and send it to him. And we actually had two different shows reach out and nothing really went anywhere. And that's okay because in all fairness, probably wasn't the right time in my life for that to be.
It might be now.
You never know. Right. It's definitely always been a dream of mine that I would love to do. Yeah.
Maudra and Mark Little will get right on that.
They're my magic makers.
I think that would be really fun.
No, I would love to do that. Yeah. That is something. I want to share what we do with people in a realistic way, right?
Right.
As one of my favorite designers that I enjoyed watching is Genevieve Gorder. I don't know if you remember her from TLC, but she has such an engaging, just warm personality, and I was always intrigued by watching her because her designs were just so much more authentic and engaging.
Right. Your designs are absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Really
Thank
stunning
you.
And different. Like,
Thank you.
Obviously, and as it should be, each home should look different than the other home because then it becomes your style if all of the homes look like you.
Yes.
But then the fact that you're able to do so many different, looks. Now, Maggie Dickhouse is okay, so that was a renovation, right?
It was a massive renovation.
And you did project manage that?
I did. So they had a, Bob has his own remodel team as well. So they had someone on staff that was over the actual construction side of it, but we collaborated and worked together. But yes, I was kind of overseeing most of the project design-wise and executing.
Beautiful setting, beautiful home, and some of the pictures that I have seen. I mean, it is really stunning. How long did that take you to do that?
I think we were in less than a year.
That's crazy.
I mean, the speed at which that one went, like it was smoking my other projects. Yeah. I think it was just, it's their team in place and their relationships. Bob has such a great relationship with a lot of the people in the area too. So people were willing to step up and help. And then in the event that any of their people couldn't, I was able to bring some of my trades to the table to help as well. But it was a great project. It was one that I wasn't sure I was ready for. Mm. It was a funny story. I was referred by the draftsman and architectural designer, and she called me and she said, "Libby, I have a project for you. It's on the bay, not far from your office, and I think you'd be a great fit for them." And I was like, "Oh, okay, what is it? Give me the details." And she tells me, "The wife's not quite ready. The husband loves it. They just bought it. It's 30 acres. And I went, "I know exactly what you're talking about." Mm-hmm. My husband had sent me the listing to the house weeks prior. And he's like, "Where is this? This is magical. Mm-hmm. This is so cool." And so the second she said that, I kind of got goosebumps and was like, "This is a God thing. Like, there is no other way that this is orchestrated but him." And so, long story short, we set up the meeting. I go to meet Bob and Maggie, and Maggie shows up and she goes, "You have got your work cut out for you, sister, because I'm a beach girl. This is not my life." And the architectural designer also said, "Your job is to make her fall in love with the place." Oh. The husband wants to be there full time. She doesn't want to be there full time yet. They have a house on the Gulf. They're not, she just wants to have dual citizenship, if you will. Like, I know that's a funny thing to say between the bay and the Gulf, but it's a different pace of life, right? As, you know, people that have been here as long as we have, you know that there's a big difference. And so when I first met her, larger than life personality, but what I loved about Maggie immediately was just like, you know where you stand. Mm-hmm. And to earn the trust of someone so blatantly truthful all the time was such a big thing for me. I pride myself on becoming friends with my people, right? And true friends, not just like, "Hey, let's be friendsies while we do this, and then I'm going to exit stage left, and we'll keep in touch." Like, I genuinely care about them. And it was really interesting how the project evolved. She trusted me implicitly, and I don't take that lightly, especially with someone who has an artistic background like she does. So knowing that she gets color, that she gets texture, and and those kind of things were just, it was a big deal for me.
That's a
big
statement.
Yes. And I did not take it lightly. We ran with it. And they, I think because she trusted me, I took some big creative liberties and really kind of, as I say, I rolled in a few grenades and blew up some thoughts on like, "Oh, hey, I know you wanted to do it this way, but what if we do it this way?" One of them, which is my absolute favorite from that project, was the bathtub in front of the tower. So like taking a bath and looking out over those oak trees and over the bay, that's not where we were originally going to put it. But when we were standing in that space, I looked at it and I said, "That's where the tub goes." I don't know how we're going to work the rest of this out. That's where the tub goes.
Love it.
And we tiled the ceiling. It was like a kind of, the architectural term is escaping me at the moment, but it was almost like a little tent vault in there and almost a little rounded, squared off space. And so cool. Pretty. It's a moment. You know, we lit it all. It's, you know, it's a vibe in there.
So cool.
Yes.
So cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, sharing the story. I lots of kudos and respect for you and your business that you built and the reputation and the brand that you have. And just you as a person. You're delightful and appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this.
You're so welcome. You. Hope you all enjoyed this lovely conversation with Libby, and check out her work as well. Have a good day, everybody. Bye-bye.